This is Hemp Rock Radio. I'm the Happy Hemptress, voice of the resistance, and we are a member of the WEED Radio Network. And you are listening, of course, on www.hemprock.com. This is a continuing saga, the next segment in the brand new Hemp Rock Radio show here on this webpage that concerns the Cincinnati, Ohio marijuana ordinance that has been up for a year and is coming up for a sunset, meaning it will be expiring on March 29th of this year, 2007. The city council, we have word, is going to, at the law committee on March 27th, Cecil Thomas plans on pushing this ordinance back through and try to get it voted and put into law permanently on Wednesday, the 28th. So we need everybody, I mean everybody, and your brother and your uncles and your aunts and moms and dads and cousins to write and call City Council. Of course, the telephone number is 513-352-3246 to call and get messages and be transferred over to each council member. But there is a new way in town to contact your local officials. I have a person sitting here by. I also have another person as well. We'll get to him in a minute. That is Paul Green from the Hamilton County Libertarian Party, who is working with us to stop this ordinance from being put back into law. But we have a new guest and a new activist, well, actually not new entirely, but new to this issue, here sitting with me, and we are going to talk about his organization that they have started here in Cincinnati, and he will tell you how you can go and, with just a few clicks, send an email to all of the city council members. My guest, as I said, is Spencer Dennis. His organization is Citizens for a Safer Cincinnati. Spencer, give me a rundown. How and why and when did you start this organization?
Well, I guess I'm new to this issue because the issue is kind of new to me anyway. Since I've lived in Cincinnati, this is the first time that they're trying to send people to jail just for possession of any amount of marijuana. I actually was busted for possession quite a few years ago, and it was a payout ticket. I didn't have to report on applications, and it didn't ruin my life, thank God. So.
And now with this new law, that could potentially happen for individuals.
They can go to jail for up to 30 days for the first-time offense and up to 6 months if they're caught a second time, which is ridiculous, especially when our city officials are telling us the jails are overcrowded and that there's some risk that violent criminals might be released early. It makes no sense to put people in jail for possession of small amounts of marijuana. It's ridiculous.
I concur with that, and that is the scenario that's been going on in our country. One of the council members, Lakita Cole, last year went on a diatribe, and you can actually hear this clip on the Hemp Rock Radio page and go down to all the different clips from the different council people from last year's March 29th meeting. But in the clip with Lakita Cole, she's making statements like, this isn't the 70s anymore. It's now that it's, you know, we're in the 2000s now, and every decade, basically, it's gotten worse. And I know that it was done different back then, but we need to do something different now. And, you know, I have to say to Councilman Cole, it is the drug war that is causing the escalation. That is what is making this happen. That's why this ordinance is not working, because as soon as you make laws against something, more crimes increase. So that's what your group is Citizens for Safer Cincinnati, the website safecincinnati.com. And, you know, what do you see? Do you see that this is helping and how this is going to help us as far as keeping us safer and keeping violence off the street? Do you think it's working yourself?
Absolutely not. Violence is the number one issue in my community, is concern about violence.
And where do you live?
I live in Clifton on Riddle Road, and I've also lived on Chase Street in Northside. And when I lived there, it was the same thing. Violence is what people are concerned about. They're not concerned about people who are getting high. And if we have a very limited amount of resources, which we do because we're putting out over $800 million for two stadiums, so we don't have a lot of money to build a new jail. And with those limited resources, we need to focus on the number one problem in our community, which is violent crime. And real quick, to quote from Todd Portune's letter that he wrote to City Council asking them not to pass this law, he said, "There are so many studies that indicate that America's war on drugs is a failure that I do not need to repeat them here. According to many of our judges, it has worked to clog our system and jail even more," referring to the marijuana ordinance. So, I mean, it's pretty clear this is the guy who's going to have to figure out how to finance a new jail, and he's telling them not to vote for it. So I don't think there's any excuse to pass a law like this at a time like this for our city. It's ridiculous.
Well, I agree with that completely. And, you know, Commissioner Portune is right. So, you know, I have to say this because it's not because I don't like football, because, you know, football's okay to me. But I was definitely on the side of the camp that Commissioner Portune was on, which was to stop the stadium the way it is and try to get it up further and make it more feasible for the downtown area. He unfortunately lost, but I can assure you, Spencer, that if I had to choose between tax dollars paying for a football stadium or a jail, you can damn well bet it's going to be the football stadium.
And I think people wanted to keep a stadium, but we definitely got hosed on the deal, which was what we're learning right now. But that's over and done with. The issue is that that's happened, and we don't have the money there to build a new jail without raising taxes. And now they want to put even more resources into people with small amounts of marijuana. It just doesn't make sense at all. And no one on council who plans or is even thinking about voting for this has gotten back to my website and told us their reasons or why they support it. The only two people who have gotten back to us are Jim Tarbell, our vice mayor, and David Crowley, who both said they will not be voting for it. And everyone else on council hasn't gotten back to us and said how they're going to vote. So.
And so do you think it's a coincidence that they haven't gotten back to you, or do you think they're just really busy?
I think that if they vote yes on it and haven't gotten back to us, it just shows that they have no legitimate reasons or logical reasons to be voting for this law, because they can't even state them to me. I have an open letter posted on my website that just says, hey, let us know what you're doing. We've generated about 80 emails and we'll be getting more until they vote, and they haven't gotten back to anyone except for David Crowley and Jim Tarbell are the only people who have gotten back to them, and they've both said they're voting no. No one else will respond and give any reasons they would possibly support this ordinance. It obviously doesn't make sense. So.
And you know, and that this is the issue. Now, Paul sitting next to us, he can tell us also his experiences last year when we were fighting Cecil Thomas last year and David Pepper the year before. Here's the thing. That is what happens. Only James Tarbell and David Crowley would answer back and communicate with us. The rest, who I believe aren't working for the citizens, they're working.
Not if they won't tell them their reasons for.
Say that again.
I said apparently they're not working for the citizens if they won't respond to 80 emails that we've generated and tell them the reasons or considerations that they may vote how they do. So if they won't even respond to them, clearly they're not working for them, I would say.
Yeah, exactly. You know, here's an example of another drug warrior who I am actually glad that John Cranley lost against Shabbat on the west side where I live. I don't really like Shabbat, but the one difference between Shabbat and Cranley when they were running for the representative, a friend would go up and try to talk to both of them about medical marijuana and this ordinance here in Cincinnati, and Cranley ran all the time. Shabbat at least would sit there and talk to him. Does he sway? No. But the thing that sets him apart from our lame council or clownsel people, as we like to call them, is that Shabbat, every time I have clicked and sent emails to Shabbat on the issue of medical marijuana or other marijuanas, he at least responds not only with an email back, but with a paper letter saying, well, you know, I really don't support it. But the issue is that not only do they not represent the citizens here on city council, except for the mayor, the vice mayor, and Crowley, as far as I'm concerned, they also won't answer to us.
They won't even have a discussion with the citizens. That's the real problem. So I would rather a politician get back to me and tell me the reasons they disagree than ignore me when I'm a voter that could possibly vote for them or maybe even has voted for them.
Well, that is the problem, because most pot smokers that I know that live in the Cincinnati area voted in 2006, or rather 2005's elections, voted for Lakita Cole because she opposed David Pepper on the same issue with the medical or the marijuana ordinance back in June of 2005. But then when he lost his bid for mayor, she got on the bandwagon. Now, I'm not going to make any racist comments and say it was the white guy she didn't support and then the black guy she did, but she made it a race issue. You can go, again, listen to her clip on hemprock.com where she says, oh, I'm sick and tired of these people coming down here saying only black people smoke pot, and you didn't support the voter after they've put you in. Lady, it was pot smokers, and we come in all shapes and colors and sexes. That's who we were talking about, not the black people that only smoke pot. No, the pot smoker voted for you, ma'am, because you supported us the year before and then stabbed us in the back after you won your seat again. So now, of course, you know, if anybody heard the other segment about this on the other show that was recorded this week, I personally and my organization is challenging them. I know that Paul Green wants to touch on this, and yourself, your organization is challenging them on this, that when last year this was voted in, not only did other council members allude that they really didn't know if it was going to work, but Thomas and Giz actually state, and you can go hear these clips, that they will not vote this back in if it does not do the job of stopping the violence or finding more guns. Well, you know, the stats are there. You can go look at the report also. Click on it, open it up. So, you know, what is your message? You're Citizens for a Safer Cincinnati. What do you say to the council for ignoring all your people and not doing what they're supposed to do and doing the exact opposite of what people who voted for them want them to do? What do you say to them?
We encourage people to go to our website and email council, and the more emails we get, the more we'll be able to hold them accountable for their vote, regardless of how it is. If the vote is close, we still have a chance for a veto from the mayor. So regardless of what a handful of people on council want to do, there's still hope, especially if we speak out and get in touch with our representatives and let them know that this law does not make any sense for our city. It's not the direction that we want to Cincinnati to be headed at all. We're headed in the opposite direction of the rest of the country and the rest of the world. So,
well, you know, we're not only 10 years behind, we're backwards also.
At least on this issue. There's a lot of good things about Cincinnati as well. But on this issue, we're moving in the opposite direction that the rest of the country is headed. So,
absolutely. And, I'd like to add that, you know, here in Ohio, and I don't smoke cigarettes anymore, but you can't smoke tobacco in the places. So here on the river, here in Cincinnati versus what I call, you know, I say it's Cincinnati, Kentucky anyway. Most people, when they want to have a good time, they're going to Newport-on-the-Levee now. Not only can you smoke cigarettes over there, if you get caught for marijuana, you're going to go to jail just like you will in Cincinnati anyway. So what difference does it make where you're at? You might as well go where you can have more fun. So they're killing our tourism. Yeah. That's the main thing. As I said, we're also sitting here with Paul Green, Hamilton County Libertarian Party. I want to get his scoop on what's going on, the information that he's gotten and compiled on the stats, and he can talk a little bit about what he's experienced over the last couple of years with this issue here in Cincinnati.
Thank you, Lynn. I'm a longtime listener, first-time guest. Thanks for having me on the show. I just looked at the statistics and looked at the claims that the benefits of this ordinance were supposed to be that it was going to reduce the number of people coming to Cincinnati from Kentucky and Indiana to buy drugs. It would allow police to do a more thorough search and reduce the number of guns on the street, and would allow police to arrest more drug dealers and reduce crime. So looking at the statistics, and these are all coming straight from the Cincinnati Police Department, it turns out it's reduced the number of people coming from other states, including Kentucky and Indiana, by a total of 95 people out of about 3,000 tickets written. So it really hasn't had much effect at all in terms of deterring people from other states. It's about a 0.7% decrease in the number of people coming from Kentucky and Indiana. And since that number is so little, it's certainly not going to have any impact on the demand for drugs and therefore the demand for drug dealers in Cincinnati. And significantly, the stats for the tickets written in 2005 showed that less than 3% of the people ticketed were from Kentucky and Indiana. So this was not really a big part of the problem to start with. But the really important issues are, is it was supposed to reduce the number of guns on the street. So while it's impossible to do a survey and find out how many illegal guns there are, you can look at the number of guns used in crimes. In 2005, that number was 1,124, and in 2006, there were 1,553 guns used in crimes, which is a 28% increase. So in other words, not only has this law reduced the number of guns on the street, the number of guns used in crimes has actually gone up. And if we just look at drug dealers carry handguns. Now, the number I cited before includes all kinds of guns, including handguns, rifles, and shotguns. Most drug dealers carry a handgun. There has been a 17% increase in the number of handguns used in crime between 2005 and 2006. So this law has been an utter and complete failure. In fact, things have gotten worse when we talk about guns. Now, the other one is, let's look at has it reduced crime? If we look at Part 1 crimes, which are serious offenses and include murder, rape, robbery, aggravated assault, burglary, larceny, and auto theft, we find that there was a 16% increase in the murder rate and an astounding 44% increase in the robbery rate. For overall, there was a 4.4% increase in serious crimes between 2005 and 2006. So once again, not only has this law not reduced crime, crime has actually gone up, and that's to be expected if you know anything about the history of the war on drugs.
And that is the history of the war on drugs. You know, I say this every show. Everybody in not only the world, but in our country, most of us, and I admit I'm one of those people that needs Sugar Anonymous. People are addicted to sugar, whether it's corn syrup, white powder sugar, it doesn't matter. I like to use the white powder sugar syndrome because, you know, the boys are out there selling the white powder cocaine, and if they were to outlaw sugar tonight, you can bet, folks, that the dealers will be selling sugar next to the marijuana and the crack tomorrow. And that will be most of their customers Because, again, a majority of our population is addicted to sugar because they eat regular food, which is full of corn syrups and additives and fillers. And people don't even realize they're addicted to it. I was talking to somebody the other day, and he's like, well, you know, I don't really eat that much sugar. And he was a large man. And I said, and what is that you're drinking there sitting on the coffee table? You had a Mountain Dew. How many of those you drink a day? Yeah, I guess now that I think about it, I guess I do drink a lot of sugar and eat a lot of sugar. I said 11 or more teaspoons in one can of pop. Mountain Dew is probably 13 teaspoons, yes. Coke is about 11. So you do the math. One can of Coke, that's like injecting sugar into your veins, folks.
McDonald's puts sugar on their French fries, and their ketchup packets are almost entirely sugar.
Well, ketchup in and of itself is corn syrup and tomato.
Yeah.
So the ketchup is anyway. But you're absolutely right about the sugar. People don't believe this. They soak their fries in sugar water before it's flash frozen. That's why the kids like their French fries better than Burger King.
It's true. I read it in the McDonaldization of Society.
Wonderful. Yeah, I've known that for years, and people think I'm crazy. They put, what do they want to put sugar? It makes the French fries sweeter, folks. And therefore makes you want them more than Burger King's or Wendy's, okay? Because we have only four senses on our tongue, I believe it is, sour, bitter, sweet, and one other one, unless it's the three. But so maybe tangy, as Spencer just said. So, yeah, the drug dealers will have a field day if they outlaw sugar. And, you know, I say this. You're right, Paul. These stats prove not only did we break the murder rate record this past year since this law took effect, robbery, all the serious crimes are up. The gun crime is up. And I said this before, not because they have found the guns, but these are reported cases where they haven't found the guns, but the gun crime occurred. So now we can either go back to the decrim or even tax and regulate and legalize. I like to say that if we were to give permits to the drug dealers on the corners like they do hot dog vendors, how many hot dog vendors do you see shooting each other over their customers? It just doesn't happen. And that's what would happen with legalization or taxing and regulating. So I say the blood is on Cecil Thomas's hand. He's a grandstander. He knows that the city does not want it. It's a vested interest for him. Not going to even speculate why, but it's dirty dealing as far as I'm concerned, and I say this to every one of the council people that last year put this on the books and voted for this. I guess I can't slam Birding too much since he actually didn't come to vote for the sunset law that he proposed. But the rest of them, which does not include, of course, David Crowley and James Tarbell, I love and adore these guys for doing the right thing. But the rest of you, you know, you're working for us. So I can assure you, not only myself and my two friends sitting here, my good friend now Spencer Dennis, sitting here from Citizens for a Safer Cincinnati, but my other longtime friend Paul Green from the Hamilton County Libertarian Party, we have lots of friends. Always remember, I want the council to know this, just because there might only be a handful of us that you see, pot smokers are like roaches. Where you find one, there's 1,000 hiding in the closet. And guess what? Most of us do vote. Okay, so I can assure you that even the non-smoker that supports us in Cincinnati will make sure that if you do not do what you said you would last year and let this ordinance die the way the drug war should, we will make sure you are not on council. And if this law does get passed permanently, you can bet once you're voted off, and we will make sure you're voted off in 07 this year, we will put a proposal back in council to have it overturned anyway and make sure that new council overturns what you guys have done to bring blood into this city worse than it is. You might as well be in Detroit now, because that's what our city is turning into. And in Detroit has even figured it out and legalized medical marijuana.
Well, I'd just like to say that last year some of the council members could plead ignorance, even though I did send them a study which said, hey, it's going to increase violence. But this year they have no excuse. So if they vote for this, they're clearly supporting more violence, more murder, more robberies, more guns, crimes committed with a gun. And I just don't see how they can make that vote ethically. I mean, I just can't see how they can do that and face themselves in the mirror in the morning.
Well, I think that's my whole point, is that I'm challenging them to do the right thing, because they might not have an issue looking in the mirror, but they're going to have an issue looking at the citizens who are ending up being the victims of more violent crime, and the blood is on their hand.
I would agree with you, absolutely.
Let's give out the website for your organization one more time, and I think you have a statement that you want to make, Spencer.
Yeah, absolutely. My website is www.safecincinnati. It's safecincinnati.com. And if you click at the top of the page on Contact City Council, you can send one email that'll go to all of council, so it's pretty easy. But I just wanted to say something about his numbers. Like, these are raw numbers, the amount of violent crimes committed with guns in 2005, it was 1,124. And in 06, which is the year they passed the marijuana ordinance, it was 1,553. So that's 400 plus more violent crimes that were committed with a handgun in the year after they passed this law. That's pretty basic. There's no, I mean, that's obviously an increased crime, so there's no excuse to pass the law.
And this is what happens everywhere. Every stat around the country throughout the history of the drug war or prohibition, even in other countries, when a prohibition, I mean, come on, let's go back to the alcohol. Alcohol prohibition created the drive-by shooting and the submachine gun situation. You know, let's Valentine's Day massacre. That's what that was all about. That's what we have today, folks, and it's in our cities. It's not only in the inner city now. It's coming into the neighborhoods, and there's only one way to stop it, and that's stop the drug war. And the last thing we want to do is increase it in our city that's supposed to be one of the safest and nicest cities in the country. Well, that is a myth, and it's not true anymore. You might as well go over to Newport, Kentucky, because there's less crimes going on over there, as far as I know. Anyway, this has been the next installment on the Cincinnati, Ohio Marijuana Ordinance with Hemp Rock Radio, and I want to thank Spencer Dennis, and again, that's safecincinnati.com, and I want to thank Paul Green. The website for the Hamilton County Party is?
You can go to www.lpo.org, select counties, and then go to the Hamilton County page.
Wonderful. Gentlemen, thank you very much. We will be there strong. We want everybody to come with us Tuesday, be there before 2 o'clock at City Hall, third floor, to show support against Cecil Thomas's ludicrous marijuana ordinance. And check us out, of course, always here at hemprock.com. This has been Hemp Rock Radio, a member of the WEED Radio Network, and I'm the Happy Hemptress, voice of the resistance, and we will give you updates as we get them. Thank you, and have a great day.